We are back at it. Emergency podcast time. It is a Sunday special Central Michigan edition. I'm Carson Cunningham, trying to turn off my sound effect. There we go. Joined as always by Kyle Porter. Kyle, we don't do emergency pods very often, but this one calls for it. I don't even know where to begin.
I don't either. We usually, whenever we get on these, I think that it's maybe people don't understand the mechanics of it, but we usually chat for like 5 minutes just about what's going on and just, you know, whatever, personal stuff. And we literally started talking like 30 seconds ago and just had to like jump into it. So we haven't talked about anything, so it should be fun.
Yeah, I guess it should be fun. It could be like the game and brutal. Let's start with obviously the whole debacle that happened at the end of the game. I was down on the field, and you know, I was on the side of the field that Mason Rudolph threw the pass. Let's go over that decision first.
Yes.
I didn't know at the time that there was not even a receiver running a pattern. And so I go out on the field and I saw they threw a flag. I assumed they had flagged them for a late hit on Mason Rudolph, and I thought the game would be over and that was fine. And then, of course, we found out what happened. Before we get into just the debacle of the officiating, how in the world does Mike Gundy not put a receiver over there?
Well, yeah, I don't know. So here's if you're making a defense for Mike Gundy, who are our friends from Making a Murderer, the defense attorneys?
Buting and Strang.
Yeah, if you're Strang and you're representing Mike Gundy in a court of law, here's your best defense. Your best defense is that there's this sort of unwritten rule at the end of – your best defense is an unwritten rule. That's not good. At the end of games that sort of the game's over, and if you throw this intentional grounding type pass – somebody posted the Jameis Winston pass from a couple years ago at AT&T Stadium when Oklahoma
State – We were there for that one.
Yeah, when Oklahoma State played Florida State, and it was sort of the same thing. There were receivers kind of out there, but he basically just threw it away. And so I think Mike Gundy's thinking there is that there's this unwritten rule that you just don't really call it because the game's over. Now, that's not a great way to go about this. Obviously, we found out, but I think that I think that's probably what happened and is the best defense that I can come up with for why either you don't tell him to get outside the tackle box, which Gundy said he should have done at the end of the game, you don't put a receiver out there, or you don't just give it to Justice Hill, who should still be running down the Cimarron Turnpike right now with the ball. Like, he should be running back to Tulsa, back to your favorite.
To Booker T.
Back
should have stopped when he got to Booker T.
Yeah, and he should be getting a ride back to Stillwater right now. And Oklahoma State should have won 27-26. So that, I mean, does any of that resonate with you?
It resonates, but if you're Buting and Strang, you say, yes, my client totally botched the call, but the game should have been over. He is innocent. The officials are guilty. Let's get him off death row. But my biggest problem with what you brought up, Kyle, is in Florida State, they at least had a receiver
right
off of the line of scrimmage. He was at least in the vicinity of where Winston threw it. And Mike Gundy gave the officials a reason to throw a flag simply by not having a receiver, even running 5 yards and turning around, and then at that point you can say, well, I threw it to that guy, it just kind of slipped, you know.
Yeah, because that's at least I think that might be where the unwritten rule comes in, that officials kind of just,
yeah, if there's a guy within a mile of
the
ball,
right,
if a guy even runs a pattern any direction at all, I don't think they flag it. And that's the most egregious part for me for Mike Gundy, is him assuming that they're not going to throw a flag. Well, Mike, you gave them a reason by not putting a receiver over there. That to me is the crazy. Like, Zach Robinson, friend of the pod, that's his new title.
Yeah,
said that they practice this play every Thursday.
Yeah,
they obviously practice it without putting a receiver out there.
Yep,
and having him run a route, which just, I don't understand that at all. That to me is the hardest part to grasp. On top of the officials.
Well, I want to keep talking about this, but first, how many DNRs from Coop Ale Works did you have to have last night after the just slew of work you were inundated with after that game?
Well, I had to text you because you were wanting to do a pod like right after the game, and I texted you that KOCO was riding me like bullets because not only was I trying to get all my TV stuff, they wanted us to do like a Facebook Live. I watched it. Oh, you did?
Yeah, it was great.
I had people coming at me from all angles. And yeah. Who would have thought Central Michigan would require such attention? I mean, we were going to lead the newscast, which rarely happens. So
how many DNRs?
I had a few.
Yeah.
I'll need Buting and Strang to speak for me on how many. But
I gave my dad a DNR the other day, and he was like, "Wow, that's a lot." I was like, "Yeah, it is."
It's got some firepower in there.
Yeah. So you should have texted him some pictures of that last night. Okay. Yeah, I mean, we could talk for like 2 hours about the last 3 minutes of the game,
probably should.
Yeah, the last 4 seconds of game time. I thought one of your main points that was really smart, and I sort of used and reworked on the blog, is that regardless of the entire intentional grounding debacle, somebody at Oklahoma State should have known the rule stating that the other team does not get a possession on a loss of down penalty.
Right.
I mean, that's
my point in that too is, yes, the rule book is long. It is ridiculously thick. Like, there are so many rules. I don't expect Mike Gundy to know every rule frontwards and backwards, but he damn sure better have someone on his staff that does. I mean, what are you paying these analysts for? Like, they have offensive and defensive analysts. I know they're probably not even at the – like, I don't think they're game day coaches, but not even them. Like, a strength coach. Like, somebody, like, test them every week. Like, they need to know the rules frontwards and back. Have a rule guy up in the booth. Somebody has to know the rules. You're a head coach of a football team. You're paid $3.5 million. I don't expect you to know every rule, but you need to be able to confer with someone that does. And that, to me, was just as egregious as the call, because that was the most striking thing to me, Kyle, in postgame, was Mike Gundy had no idea what had happened.
Yeah, I know.
Like, he was being asked about it, and Jason Elmquist from the Stillwater News Press had to read, like, the tweet.
I saw that. That was pretty funny.
He should have just shortened it to Mike. They shouldn't have run a play. Your thoughts?
Right.
But Mike didn't know that was the rule, which obviously we know that now. But the biggest problem I have with him is he thought that what he did with the intentional grounding, like, he knew it was a penalty and just didn't think they would throw the flag.
Yeah.
He relied on the referee. Like, he gave them an out without putting a receiver there, and then he relied on them not to throw a flag.
Yeah.
You basically open Pandora's box for this to happen with that. That was, to me, the biggest issue, was not only did he not know the rule, he assumed that he was breaking the rules and just didn't think they would throw a flag.
Yeah, I know.
And you mentioned Justin Blackmon, Justice Hill. This is two different, like, he's done this three different times, three different ways. Against Missouri in 2008, they punted, remember?
Mm-hmm.
And that worked out. They won. I think maybe he had flashbacks to that game and said, "I don't want to get blocked."
Yeah.
And then he had Justin Blackmon run out the back of the end zone through College Station. Like, he did it three different ways, which I thought was interesting as well.
Well, so two different things on this. First, in this situation, you, I presume, are trying to exert as much control over the situation as possible. And I guess that he thought that throwing the ball was the situation where he would have the most control over the situation, or the situation where he would have the most control over what happened. I don't necessarily disagree with that. I think punting is the one that's the most scary, just because you don't do it. I mean, Mason Rudolph throws the ball like 100 times a day or whatever. Like,
just ask Bob Stoops about punting.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I agree with you there.
And I guess running out the back of the end zone, like, there's a potential that he could drop the ball. I don't know, whatever. Like, you don't want to get close to the other team's end zone. But I don't know. It's I think my bigger point is that this is not like the first time that OSU's had end of game issues. Like, they seem to have, clock management issues at the end of games where they don't like they tried to get the clock to where, they would be able to kneel and it would run out at the very end. They weren't able to do it. My point in saying all this is, don't you need somebody on your staff that it's like, okay, what do we do here? Like, this is your only job, is to manage the clock at the end of halves, at the end of games. Like, you literally make $60,000 a year to do that. And maybe they have that person, or maybe Gundy is that person, but this seems to be like a pattern. I mean, we saw it in the Troy game with Brandon Weeden. It's happened a lot, and it almost always works out, but in this case, it didn't. And I just feel like you need somebody that you can point to and say, this is your job. What do we do here?
I totally agree. And what I would have done is just have Mason Rudolph run 5-10 yards. I mean, anybody, and then just take a knee in the game. Like, have him turn around and run, and you can see the clock.
Yeah, he could see it. Yeah,
but I really don't even have a problem with the pass, Kyle, as long as he puts a receiver out there and have them just run a pattern. Then yeah. it's a non-issue. It's over with. There's no reason to even throw a flag, even if he's in the tackle box.
I mean, did you think about the series of events that had to happen for Central Michigan to win that game?
I mean,
it's flabbergasting. The like eight different things that had to happen in the last 4 seconds of the game for them to win.
Well, and you mentioned the late game issues. I thought Jace Chilcote, he was a former walk-on,
play
quarterback. He tweeted at me after the game, and he would know. I mean, he was on the team and stuff, and he made a great point. He said, Gundy is well-informed and preaches knowing the rules. I'm sure he just didn't have a clear head after boneheaded plays. So, I mean, that's right. I mean, like, when you're in the heat of the fire.
Yeah.
Like, it clouds your judgment. And maybe, I think that's more than anything, just McGundy was probably sitting there thinking, my God, we're having to do this against Central Michigan. Like, what is happening? Like, let's just throw a pass in the, you know, like.
Yeah.
And we don't think about it, but he has 20 seconds to make a decision.
Right.
Like, that's what he said. He goes, we discussed this for about 20 seconds. And this is what we came up with.
Yeah.
And I keep going back to that, the fact that they practice this every Thursday, and then they didn't run it well enough. Like they ran it asking for the officials to throw a flag. That just is amazing to me. I still can't wrap my head around it.
Yeah, it's not good. I wrote about this a little bit. I don't know what your perception was. I do want to hear what your perception was. But for me, so I'm watching – I watched the game on – like through the Fox Sports Go internet feed, because you're able to rewind and fast forward so I can pull GIFs and videos and stuff like that.
You're on a delay though, right?
I'm on a delay.
Oh, God.
I'm on like a 10 or 20 – and so I see this I know sort of what's going on, but it's a little bit of a mess. We're all kind of chatting in Slack about different stuff, and I'm trying to – I'm trying to figure out like what we're going to post on the site. I mean, it's very mechanical for me. And so I'm like, okay, let's get this last play over with, get some stuff up on the site. And then I see this tweet from Mark Cooper of the Tulsa World, who's great, friend of the pod. Yeah. He's been on here. And all it says is OMG. And I just think I'm 10 seconds behind. What's going to happen right here? And
what could possibly happen?
And then it unfolds and it's just like, I mean, I couldn't stop, like, freaking out and shake. I was, like, physically shaking for, like, 20 minutes. And not necessarily because Oklahoma State lost, but because I couldn't figure out what to put up on the site. Like, I was like, well, do I pull the video? Like, Kyle Boone's trying to figure it out. Like, it was a complete circus behind the scenes. It's probably the most shocking ending to an Oklahoma State game I've ever seen.
That, yeah, because it was the last play. I was thinking of the Tyreek Hill punt return, but I guess that didn't end the game. That just sent it to overtime. Mm-hmm. So you're right. That has to be it. I mean, I was on the field, and, you know, they obviously try to shepherd everybody off to run the last play, and some security guy kept yelling at me. I was like, dude, the game's over. There's zeros on the clock. What are you talking about? He said, no, the game's still going on. I was like, okay, well, like, I get over there. And so I get set up, and I go, oh, my God, they have a Hail Mary here. Like, they can't possibly score, can they? And he throws the pass, and, you know, I'm filming the game, I'm shooting it, and then when the guy catches it and pitches it,
yeah,
I, you know, I'm looking through my right eye through the lens, I open my left eye, and I see all five defenders out of position as the guy is sprinting the other direction. I go, my first instinct was, he's scoring. This game is over. They're going to lose this game. Oh, my God. And sure enough, and then when Ashton Lampkin tackled him, you know, I'm on the opposite end zone. It looked like he was short. And then I see Central Michigan just storm the field. I was like, oh, my God, they lost. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It was nuts.
So my Twitter broke, actually. Like, Cooper Rush and Central Michigan literally broke my Twitter. First tweet I see when I get back is OKC Dave says, at least Mike Gundy hasn't been around college football for 30 years or anything to know what's going on.
Yeah. From an outsider looking in.
It was amazing.
How does your Twitter break? What does it say?
Oh, it just, nothing would update.
It just froze?
Yeah, it just froze because so many people were tweeting about...
I imagine my tweet deck, if I had had it open, would look like the Price is Right wheel just spinning.
Yeah.
You can't even read it.
it was absurd. I think that, one thing I was thinking about just after all that, well, there's a bunch of things. I sort of want to talk about like the aftermath of it all. I mean, first of all, the mechanics of the Hail Mary, that was an unbelievable play. The pitchback?
Yeah, the pitchback.
That was unreal.
Like the odds of pulling that off are so slim. Like, I bet if they ran that play 50 times, they score one time maybe.
Yeah.
And they pull it off.
Yeah.
The one time. Do you want to talk about the game at all, or you want to keep going on this?
Well, I want to keep going on this because Barry Trammell wrote for Sunday morning's paper that he thinks Central Michigan should give the game back to Oklahoma State. I don't know like how they would do that. I don't know if there's like a form you fill out to say we actually want to take a loss for this. What did you think about that call?
I think the Tooth Fairy should be real. I think Christmas should happen every weekend. I mean, that's a fantasy world. That's Candyland. That's what I think about it.
Yeah.
Like I think he was writing it partially tongue in cheek, because he even admits in the column that obviously in the cutthroat world of college football, this is not happening. I just thought that was an interesting way to look at things, because never in a million years is that going to happen.
Right. So my thing with all this is so everybody's talking about appealing the game afterwards and, just going on a hunger strike, like just all these different things like to get Oklahoma State the win. I guess my question is like, who's in charge? Like who's in charge of wins and losses? Like who determines? Because clearly, it's not being determined by the officials. They screwed it up. And then both conferences issue a statement. The athletic directors issue a statement. I guess I just don't really know. It doesn't seem like there's a centralized governing body for college football, which probably wouldn't change the outcome, but at least you'd have some like clarity going forward. Whereas there's just information flying in from all these different sources that are so fragmented, and it doesn't make for a it's just kind of a mess.
Yeah, because you have the MAC officials with a Big 12 replay crew. You have the MAC conference, the Big 12 conference, and the NCAA. And everyone just kind of looking around like, well, don't know.
Yeah.
And I thought someone brought up a game in the past. I can't remember what it was. But I thought there was a precedent before, but I guess not, or else people would be tweeting about it, that a play happened with zeros on the clock. That shouldn't have happened, and they reversed the game. But I think that must not be true, because everyone would be screaming about that, I would think.
Yeah.
That was my biggest thing. Like, I didn't think they would reverse it, but they did run a play. The game had zeros on the clock.
Yeah. It was, I mean,
that to me felt like an out.
That's the thing. Is like, so we officially have a case in which the clock does not determine that the game's over, but rather the officials do. Right. Like, that's a really interesting precedent, because what if this happens in, like, the college football playoff?
Yeah.
Like what then? Like, what would you – I mean, this is – it's a big deal to us, but nationally it's not – it doesn't really affect much. But what if this is college football playoff? What if this is a national championship game? What happens? You know?
Well, I think Nick Saban knows the rule and stops the refs from screwing him over. That's what I think.
I think Alabama's up 14.
What percentage chance do you think Nick Saban would have just stopped that from happening?
Do you think
my point was Gundy should have known the rule and should have stood at the 50 and dared them to throw him out of the game until they call the replay crew.
That would have been great. I loved it. I loved that you said that.
He gets his chair that he sat on for Savannah and just plops it at midfield.
Well,
sits there.
My suggestion was for him to hit up Larry Reese in the press box and tell him to hit the music and just start doing the Gundy, like just at midfield until until somebody either throws him out or they figure out what's going on.
Or just have Larry Reese say, that's the ball game.
Yeah, and they're just leave. Just leave. Yeah, I mean, if he would have known the rule, that I presume that's what he would have done.
Yeah.
And
just sit down, have the team come over and just start cutting your hair, cutting your mullet. Just say, this isn't going well. Let's delay matters and cut my hair.
So my other point is this, and this is a point that Mrs. Pistols actually brought up very smartly. She does not really care about all this, but we were talking about it today. And I think the question, if you're an Oklahoma State fan, is what has really changed about Oklahoma State's season? And what I mean by that is you can still win the Big 12 title. Now, you're not playing well enough to even finish fifth, but theoretically, you can still win the Big 12 title. And here's the main point. The only thing that this game, that non-conference games really affect, are your postseason bowl game or college football playoff appearance. So we saw that with OU and Houston in week one. So here's my point with Oklahoma State. If your end goal is to make the college football playoff, and if the only way you were going to do that is probably to go 12-0, I don't think this game changes much, because I think if you go 11-1, like if you win 10 in a row, and I know this sounds absurd because they can't win 10 in a row, but if you win 10 in a row, I think you get to the very end of it, and because there's a committee that's determining things, I think they look at the Central Michigan game as like, well, I mean, that was basically a win, you know? Like, so I guess my point is that in the big scheme of things, this doesn't change a whole lot about Oklahoma State's season, because the reality is you're probably not going to the college football playoff, and even if you were going to, I think you could still get there by going 11-1. Do you agree or disagree?
Yeah, it's funny you brought this up, because I was talking with my friends about it last night, and they were making the argument that, granted, I mean, these are OU fans. They said if OSU goes undefeated, they and their one loss is Central Michigan, the committee will basically treat them like they're undefeated.
Yep.
And they'll get in over a one loss, you know, SEC, whomever. And I was like, well, you guys don't know how OSU football works. They'll be behind everyone. Because they're Oklahoma State. Like, they were behind freaking Iowa last year.
Yeah.
Who hadn't played anybody. So, like, but it is interesting. And I think you're right. I think the committee would look at that as a win, because they won the game. The game was supposed to be over. It's not on the record books. And you're right. Like, it's a non-conference game. It doesn't really affect the Big 12. And we don't think they're making the playoff anyway. So, really,
that's why
I wasn't even, like, really upset or anything. Like, I was kind of just in shock, to be honest. But, like, I didn't take it that big of a – I don't know what I'm trying to say, but that I'm still in stunned silence, I guess. My friends made the exact same point.
The two things it affects are, one, I think there are a bunch of recruits there on Saturday, so Kyle Boone tells me, which is not great.
Like, I saw them walking off the field in stunned silence. It's like, yeah. Oh, that probably didn't make a great impression.
Yeah, hey, you want to come here? You'll probably play, you know.
Set another rules.
And then, two, it affects your bowl game. But one thing my dad brought up is that it could affect, you know, in the postseason, like how much money you make. But I'm pretty sure all the bowl money and playoff money and everything that Big 12 conference teams earn goes into a big pool, and you split it up 10 ways anyway. So I don't think – I mean, if it affects you financially, it's very minuscule in that sense. But yeah, I mean, I think that in some ways, like, a loss like this to, like, when you're a talented team, like I still think Oklahoma State is, can really kind of galvanize you, you know? I think that they will, I think it will galvanize them. I think they're good. I think Mason Rudolph is still really, really good. He played horrendously on Saturday, obviously. But I think they're a good team, and I think that they will bounce back, and I think they'll still have a good year. Are you not convinced?
I was really down on the team after watching that game. They got outplayed by Central Michigan. That's the thing that's kind of lost in the craziness of the game. They were so fortunate to be ahead in the first place. Like, the fumble they got right after Mason's interception in the end zone, so fortunate to even be ahead. They really deserve to lose the game on top of just the craziness that happened. And I feel like I jinxed Mason, Kyle. I blame myself. I went on the Sports Animal and the Franchise and talked up Mason as having the potential to be the best quarterback in school history. He's going to throw for over 4,000 yards. His ceiling has – there is no ceiling. And he laid an absolute egg, and I thought he looked completely horrible. And I was kind on Twitter, and people just were eviscerating me for not calling him trash.
Yeah, I got some of that too. Like, I can't believe you trashed J.W. Walsh for 4 years, but you're still riding Mason. And it's like, okay, well, first of all, let's settle down. Like, it's one game. He was not good. I thought the most interesting thing, I don't know if he's, I think I tweeted about this, but he was asked afterwards if he felt like he made some mistakes that he doesn't normally make, and he said no. And I just thought that was odd. Like, did he not think he was bad? You know, like, I mean,
did he forget all the overthrows from wide open guys that would have scored? Like, that's not him. Like, he normally hits those on the money every time.
Right, right. Yeah,
Gundy was critical. Like, I mean, yeah. I guess he's been critical in the past, but he said he was either right on the money or not even close.
Yeah.
Which, for Mason Rudolph to not even be close, to me, is stunning.
Hey, what was your, before I forget about this, what was your, how did you envision Gundy after he calls a fourth down play to a true freshman with the season on the line in week two on a fourth down on the 2 yard line? I mean, what was going through your head about, was it just Gundy like just walking around just, you know, like I own the country, like you should vote for me for president? Like, what was that all about?
I thought Gundy may have fainted on the sidelines from the heat. And Stoner just took the reins himself and just said, I got this, coach, and just ran out there without his knowing. I mean,
that was insane.
I was talking with a guy in the field, and we were both saying, like, run the jet sweep to this side. It's wide open. Yeah. And that's what they ran. I didn't think they needed Dylan Stoner to run it, but hey, it worked. And they had to run a gadget play to get a yard against Central Michigan, which I think is the most alarming thing.
Yeah, and I think it really speaks to, and you know, I think you and I might have incorrectly estimated this, but I think it speaks to how valuable J.W. Walsh was in the red zone last year. I think if you go back to 2014, I'm pretty sure they were like, maybe literally the worst red zone team in the country from a touchdown percentage perspective. So not points wise, like they kicked a lot of field goals. But just from scoring touchdowns when they get in the red zone, I think they were like bottom five in the country, and they're a lot better last year. But that was because of J.W. Walsh, and we thought that Rudolph would be fine and they would improve that. But he just repeatedly tried to throw these terrible fades to James Washington, and when he wasn't doing that, he was trying to hit Jalen McCleskey on these slip screens, and they just nothing was going. It was odd. Like, they were just really bad inside the red zone.
Yeah, we're seeing why they had to install the Walsh package.
Yeah. Cuz
they can't run the ball. They can't get a tough 1 or 2 yards. We know this. And so they've had to resort to those, you know, the wildcat type stuff. And props to your boy Boone for predicting that Dylan Stoner would run the wildcat at some point.
Yeah, that was.
I think Nate owes him an apology.
Yeah, that was some reporting from Boone. I was proud of him for that. He did a good job.
Season on the line, no less. They ran it.
Yeah, that was big time. Okay,
but the running game. Never did I think OSU fans would be calling to run the ball more. But Gundy said afterwards that they abandoned the running game. They never even tried it. Like, the only times they really ran the ball were in obvious passing situations, trying to catch the defense off guard.
Yeah.
And it worked a few times. And they played five running backs, Kyle. It's time to give the ball to Justice Hill.
Okay, hold on. I want to talk about this, but we need to hear from our two sponsors this week real quick. Coop Ale Works knows you love game day, tailgates, and great beer. Show off your Coop tailgate before September 19th, and you might be headed to the Great American Beer Festival in Denver, Colorado. Just snap a picture of your crew tailgating with one of Coop's locally made craft beers, like my personal favorite, the famous F5 IPA. Tag Coop in it or use the hashtag CoopTailgate on social media like Twitter and Instagram, and you'll be entered. Grand prize is an all-expense-paid trip to join other craft beer lovers in Denver, Colorado on October 8th. You must be 21 or older to enter and win. I also want to talk about our new sponsor, Chris's University Spirit. Chris's University Spirit on Campus Corner in Stillwater, Oklahoma is proud to be your one-stop cowboy shop since 1986 and proud sponsor of this podcast, Pistols Firing. They specialize in custom-printed Oklahoma State apparel and merchandise and pride themselves on their excellent customer service. They also offer a full line of custom Greek apparel and can even outfit your Little League team head-to-toe. They're located at the corner of 3rd and Knobloch on historic Campus Corner. You can follow them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and be sure to shop online at chrisuniversityspirit.com. Shop Stilly, shop Chris's University Spirit. Okay, Justice Hill. Yes, I'm all in. Are you all in?
He's the best running back.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think there's an argument. I mean, I'd still like to see Barry J get a chance. He didn't even get a chance to run the ball.
Yeah, where were him and Juwan Seals on Saturday?
I don't know.
I mean, like, why did they and first of all, I love Jalen McCluskey. I think he's a really good player, but they were acting like he was like Percy Harvin from like the 2006.
Yeah, I thought you made a great point about that. I mean, Jalen McCluskey was one of their better players on Saturday, but if I see another 2-yard hitch pattern to him and him getting leveled, I don't know what I'm going to do. Like, Eddie McDaniels is a loyal follower of mine. He made a great point. He said that Yursich at the beginning of seasons falls in love with these swing passes, these short 2-yard outs, and he always abandons them midway through the year when they need to start winning games.
Yeah.
So I don't know why he has such an affinity for those, but they don't work. And I thought McCluskey was on pace for 30 catches and 30 yards in the second quarter.
Yeah,
so I didn't understand that. I do think he had a good game. They even ran a fade to McCluskey instead of Seals. That was weird.
That was unconscionable. I don't know how you say that. I should stick to writing.
We're all a little dazed.
Yeah, it's been a weird weekend.
Don't you think that it's time to just because I don't think they're playing the best players at running back. Like, Chris Carson is fine. They obviously love him. Love him. He might change his last name to Gundy. Chris Gundy at tailback. Like, why do they love him so much? I mean, he's an okay player, but he never really makes anything happen.
I mean, I think and hopefully the loss like loosens things up a little bit, because it's very clear after this game that Justice – I mean, it's clear to me. Maybe not everybody sees this, but that Justice Hill is the dude. He's your Joseph Randle. Ride him, play him, give him 15 carries a game, throw a couple passes to him. If you need to bring Carson in for 3 carries or 5 carries or whatever, do it. Use your dudes. If you're going to have McCluskey touch the ball 80 times on offense, then let Barry J return punts or kickoffs or something. I mean, they're going to get McCluskey killed by the fourth game.
I know.
And it's like, you've got a bunch of dudes. Use them. Like, why was Chris Lacy only used when the chips were down late in the game? Is Juwan Seals, like, in line at Whataburger in the third quarter? I don't understand, like, where these guys are.
I thought it was telling too, Kyle, when they got their carries. Whenever OSU got behind, all of a sudden you see Justice Hill out there.
Yeah.
Getting a long carry. And
so do you,
and I don't think Gundy trusts him, because when they're running out the clock, who's getting a carry? Rennie Childs. He comes in the game to run the clock out. Obviously Gundy trusts Carson and Childs, thinking they're not gonna screw it up. And I think that's why they play more than anything. It's time to stop worrying about that. Give the ball to your best running back.
Well, and that was going to be my question. Do you think that they kind of played the Central Michigan game with the attitude of, okay, we don't need our A game, let's just not do anything stupid and win this and get out of here to Pittsburgh? I mean, do you think that was their attitude?
I do, but at the same time, they started throwing bombs the whole game. Like, I think they were trying to end the game with one play. Like, Yursich even said he got impatient. And so I do with who they're playing. I think they can just get by with the guys that have been there longer. They want to reward, you know how coaches are, man. They want to reward the guys who have been there a long time and work hard and do things right and love their family. And it's time to quit worrying about that. I do think there was some conservativeness to start, but I do think they also kind of pressed a little bit.
Yeah.
And Yursich even made an interesting comment that he said, maybe I need to pare down the playbook for Mason. Maybe I'm making him think too much. Maybe I just need to keep it more simple. That's on me.
Wow.
Maybe he was throwing, maybe they were going to page Z on the playbook. I don't know, but I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah, I don't know. Where do you go with Glenn Spencer from here? I mean, does the way you view him, I don't mean where do you go, but does the way you view him change after this game, or is it changing over the last few years?
I thought the defense played really well except for third down. I think he just needs to change what he does on third down, and they're fine. I thought the defensive line looked great. They've got some dudes on the defensive line.
Yeah.
They got some Nathan Peterson lookalike showed up on Saturday. I was getting some Nathan Peterson vibes. That number 82, I can't even remember his name. Walter Scheiber.
Yeah, I can't say his name. The defensive line was great. It's deep. They run.
They're running like three teams in there. Yeah. Looking stout.
Yeah, hockey lines. It's
and,
great.
And you give up, what would they have, 23 points before the debacle?
24,
should,
yeah.
You should score 40 on Central Michigan. Like, I thought the defense, for the most part, yes, there was obviously they gave up way too many third downs. I think Central Michigan was like 9 of 12 or something, some absurd percentage on third down. Other than that, I thought they played fine. Did you have a big problem with the defense?
No, I thought the defensive line played pretty well. I wasn't like blown away by Cooper Manning Rush.
Cooper Newton?
Yeah, that's good. I like that. I thought the secondary was pretty good. Ramon Richards had like the game of his life.
Richards played well. Stearns had a couple nice pass breakups.
Stearns was great.
Your boy Ramon was everywhere.
Yeah, he was terrific. I thought this pairs with your third down point. I thought the middle of the field, like the linebackers and maybe at times the secondary, was pretty soft. And I don't know if that was because of the plays they were calling or because dudes were out of position. I don't know why that was, but it wasn't good. I mean, Rush was just throwing that little slant over the middle, like just repeatedly on third down for like 21 yards and 26 yards. And it just, I don't know. They got pressure on him on the defensive line, but it didn't really matter because he was just hitting guys over the middle.
Well, and that Conklin dude will be playing on Sundays. That guy was a total mismatch.
Yeah,
and
he was pretty good.
When you have a tight end like that, it's just – it's hard to account for him. I mean, because he's too big for the DBs, and he's just overpowers everyone, even the linebackers. So yeah. I thought they utilized him well. He made an absurd catch for that touchdown. You got to give Central Michigan credit. They made some incredible plays.
Yeah, they did.
So, but yeah, I thought that's a great point. It seemed like every third down there was a guy running wide open over the middle. Yeah. So that's something they need to shore up too.
And that's just been a harbinger or a tenet of Oklahoma State defense for the last 20 years. I mean, it's just like, you know, from Javorski Lane to Central Michigan, like the whole deal. It's
one-handed catches galore.
Well, yeah, just softness on third down, and I don't know. I just feel it. I don't know. I think that Glenn Spencer's a good coach. I think he's overrated by Oklahoma State fans generally. But it just, I don't know. They don't ever seem. It feels. I know this isn't true. Like I am admitting this is not true. But it feels like they never get a third down sack when they need it, you know? Like, mm-hmm. They'll get a sack on first down or second down or something, but it just feels like it feels like they used, like, their quota up for the last 3 years against TCU last year, you know? Like, yeah. Like that was, like, all they got for this three-year period, and they don't ever get any other third down sack, so.
Well, part of that's philosophy. If you only rush three and you drop eight, yeah. You're not gonna sack anybody. So I think he really needs to mix it up a little more on third down.
Did you agree with the way they played the Hail Mary pass defensively?
Yeah. I mean, you can't just put all 11 guys in the end zone, can you? Because inevitably they're going to be drawn to the ball, I would think. Or maybe you just line all 11 on the goal line and say, hold the line, Braveheart style for Clint Spencer. Do these uniforms go down in Iowa State history?
No. This was far from Iowa State, but the uniforms were they're pretty elite. I mean, busting those out for the second. Actually, we'll talk about the uniforms. We need to mention Chris's University Spirit. So let's get to this week's uniform preview. Review brought to you by Chris's University Spirit, your one-stop Cowboy shop on Campus Corner. And be sure to shop online at chrisuniversityspirit.com.
I bet Chris's was hopping on Saturday. I saw a lot of jerseys, a lot of t-shirts. I bet they were doing good biz.
Yeah, I hope they were. Those unis were top-notch. I mean, I thought they were fantastic.
I don't want to get too hyperbolic, but they might be in my top five of all time.
Wow.
They looked mean. I love that helmet. I love the face mask.
Hey,
the gray pants might be the best article they have.
I almost called it, by the way.
You did. You were on the money. Like, Kyle Strikes Back.
I went Chrome Pete with the chrome face mask, black tops, and I missed the I said white pants, but they went gray, and the gray looked awesome.
Yeah.
The gray socks, the gray accessories.
Mm-hmm. The orange number I thought really popped.
Yeah.
On the new black jerseys. Those look sweet. I want to see that one again, but obviously they probably won't do it again this year. But
yeah
I thought that was just everything you'd want to see out of a 2016 Oklahoma State uniform. It was sensational.
Yeah, they were perfect. I have no complaints. I think they've.
Who's your uni Heisman in the game?
Well, I was going to say, I think they've moved into the, like, maybe top three. Well, this is a completely biased opinion, but for me, they're a top three team nationally every week in terms of, like, what they're wearing.
Like, they're coming for the throne.
Yeah.
Like, Oregon's slacking over there with their all yellow.
Yeah, it's
monstrosities
not,
they wore.
It's not good. My uni Heisman, I had somebody written down. Give me yours while I go back and look at my notes.
It took me about 5 seconds down on the field to. I mean, he might be getting more first place votes than Desmond Howard got in 1991 for me. It's Jordan Burton. I thought he was a runaway uni Heisman. He had the. I'm a big fan of the back flap. We discussed that last week. He was rocking that. The dreads were flowing out the back. He had the crop top, the mini armbands on the arm. It was the one sleeve. I mean, it was like I created him on NCAA PlayStation. It was good. He wore the uniform better than anybody.
I've got a newcomer to the Uni Heisman watch this week.
Oh, newcomer.
I think he's a newcomer. I don't think we mentioned him last week. Ramon Richards.
You liked Ramon?
Yeah.
I thought he looked a little disheveled myself.
Well, okay. Yeah, he did. But here's the thing. I like the and I used to do this when I played baseball a little bit. I like the undershirt sticking out underneath the uniform.
Was it the undershirt? I thought his shirt was just untucked. Was it an undershirt that was flowing?
Yeah, it was an undershirt underneath his jersey.
Okay.
I think it looks kind of cool.
From afar, it looked like he just didn't tuck in his shirt.
Well, he might have done that as well, but it does look disheveled. It looks sloppy, but I kind of like it. It worked for him, and maybe I'm being swayed by the fact that he had the game of his career. But I liked the look,
and he pulled the pants up way above his knees. I thought was a freelance move as well.
Yeah, and anybody, I mean, this is it's an unfair built-in advantage, but anybody with dreadlocks just looks cooler in uniforms like that. Like, it just looks awesome.
Yeah, you are a big fan of the undershirt. Remember Desmond Rowland's XXL orange t-shirt?
It's fantastic, fantastic.
You loved that.
Yeah, I do.
To me, it looks like they pulled a student out of the stand with pads on him without having to take his shirt off.
It's sort of a cousin of the Brandon Weeden, Justin Gilbert, like three-quarter sleeves.
Oh, see, now that's the look.
Yeah.
That's what we strive for. I don't think anyone's allowed to wear those. No one's done that since Gilbert left, I don't think.
But I like that you said that's what we strive for.
Yeah. That's what we want to see in our uni Heisman.
Yeah.
And Gilbert, the thing that was so great about him is he would freelance on what color the undersleeves were. Like, his would be different colors than anyone else.
Yeah.
I don't know who makes that call or if he just sneaks in the equipment room or what, but.
I thought Dylan Stoner did a pretty good job on Saturday too. He's pretty plain, but he's got the eye black. He just kind of looks mean. Like, he looks like he just doesn't care, you know. So I liked him. Somebody mentioned Blake Jarwin on Twitter. I was like, you know, he's fine. Like, he's a Cowboy back uni Heisman. I don't know if I can like throw him in the race overall.
Yeah. He looked NFL-ish to me.
Yeah, that's good.
But that's my uni. I think Jordan Burton's. He's running away with it for me so far.
He's your Alabama running back for Oklahoma State.
Yeah, he's Jalen Hurts from Bama. Just playing a new level.
Okay, what else do we need to talk about?
I don't know. You got anything else?
I don't think so.
I'm really discouraged on top of just the way the game ended. Just I'm discouraged about OSU moving forward. I'm gonna need to see a lot of improvement against Pitt for me to think this team's gonna challenge for the Big 12.
I mean, they could. I don't want to get carried away here, but that Pitt Texas Baylor stretch is it's suddenly looking like 2-1 is really, really good. You know, if you go 2-1 in that stretch and you end up 3-2 going into I forgot who they have after Texas, but that's tough. I mean, Pitt they beat Penn State. They ended up beating Penn State, didn't they?
42-39.
So they
put up
beat
some points.
Yeah, they beat Penn State. Baylor and Texas are your two undefeated Big 12 teams, which is weird and bizarre. By the way, I think I went 0-5 in our against the spread picks. Pretty sure.
Great start.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, I'm broadcasting from my parents' house in Edmond. Not because I mortgaged my house on OSU minus, but because I usually come hang out with them in Edmond on Sunday. So I thought that was kind of funny that had you been gambling, you might be out on the street.
Yeah, we would. I'd be living in my shed because the house would be gone.
Moving the air mattress I slept on into the shed.
Exactly. So yeah, it's good. The Pitt game next week is really interesting now because that's a big I try not to make too big of a deal out of single games, but that's a big game. I mean, for your season, for your program over the next couple of years, because if you go 1-2 in non-conference and you're going into a tough Big 12 schedule, I mean, that's yikes. That's not good. So I'm really interested to see how they bounce back next week.
Yeah, that could get 2014-ish real quick.
Yeah. But
you just made the argument that if they go undefeated in Big 12, it won't matter. So maybe we shouldn't care.
It's a hypothetical.
I got you.
So yeah, we will. We got our early week pod out of the way because we had to do the emergency. Are you going to do your Glenn Spencer Warrior poems, or do we only do that after Oklahoma State wins?
Oh, I can. I haven't practiced. Let me do a cold read here.
Okay.
We probably need some inspiration after that, don't we?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, just for you and I continuing on, soldiering on as we trudge through what could be an ugly Oklahoma State season.
Yeah, give me a second. What is this? I'm looking at his – oh, he's got Janine Edwards pictures. Okay. She was posting a picture of his, like, play sheet or something. So.
Yeah.
I need my background music.
Okay. Yeah, his poems this week were – I think there's one like really short one, but they're pretty intense for week two. We're already getting into the deep, like, I don't know, the heavy stuff.
Yeah, I mean, he had two for last week, and then he just won this week, and then he had like his own. He freelanced a little bit. He had his own little thing at the bottom.
Yeah.
But let me get my music here. I'm gonna do a cold read. I can't do this without my music.
I love this.
Hell begins on the day when God grants us a clear vision of all that we might have achieved, of all the gifts which we have wasted, of all that we might have done which we did not do. Giancarlo Minotti. Don't waste a play. Don't waste a day, an opportunity to achieve.
The accent is getting worse, which makes the
I didn't try the accent. I just went.
Wait, oh, you weren't trying the accent
then? No. Do I need to do another take?
No, it was awesome. I love it.
Hell begins on the day when God grants us a clear vision of all that we might have achieved, of all the gifts which we have wasted, of all that we might have done, which we did not do. Giancarlo Minotti. Don't waste a play. Don't waste a day. An opportunity to achieve.
I love my favorite part is that you read the author of the poem in your accent. That's tremendous.
Much like the Central Michigan game, I botched that one. I botched that like Mike Gundy. That was not good.
Well, this was good.
I'll do better week three.
This was good therapy hopefully for Oklahoma State fans. And we appreciate everybody listening. You guys be sure and go rate us on iTunes. That has been tremendously helpful for this podcast, for the blog, and just for us continuing to do that in the future. So,
breaking news. We have breaking news to end the podcast.
Yes.
The Big 12 has announced it has given a 2-game suspension for the replay officials.
Wow. There we go.
Slap, meet, wrist.
Yeah, awesome.
How are they not fired?
A two-game suspension, that's got to be embarrassing. Like, you like, got
what do they do? Just honeydews that weekend?
The replay officials were suspended. That's pretty funny.
Are the Mac officials suspended? That's what I want to know.
They should be. Okay, Carson, we will talk to you later on in the week, hopefully on Wednesday or Thursday with a guest.
Sounds good.
Okay, talk to you then.